This is Audible.
Listening Library presents The Bronze Key, Book 3 of Magisterium, by Holly Black and Cassandra Clare. Read for you by Paul Bamer. Chapter 1. Call made a few final tweaks to his robot right before sending him into the ring, a section of garage floor outlined in blue chalk. He considered it the fighting zone for the robots he and Aaron had painstakingly built out of car parts, metal magic, and a lot of duct tape. On that gasoline-soaked floor, one of their robots would be tragically rent to pieces, and the other would emerge victorious. One would rise, and the other would fall. One would... Aaron's robot chugged forward. One of its little arms shot out, wobbled, and beheaded Call's robot. Sparks fizzed in the air. "No fair!" Call yelled. Aaron snorted. He had a smudge of dirt on his cheek, and some of his hair was sticking straight up after he'd run his hands through it in frustration. The relentless North Carolina heat had left him with a sunburned nose and freckling on his cheeks. He didn't look at all like the polished Makar who'd spent the previous summer at garden parties chatting with dull, important grown-ups. "I guess I'm just better at building robots than you," Aaron said carelessly. "Oh, yeah?" Call replied, concentrating. His robot began to move, slowly at first, then faster as metal magic reanimated its headless body. "Take that!" Cole's robot lifted an arm, and fire shot out like water from a hose, spraying Aaron's robot, whose whole body began to smoke. Aaron tried to summon water magic to douse it, but it was too late. The duct tape was burning. His robot collapsed in a pile of smoking parts. "Woohoo!" Call cried out. He'd never taken any of his dad's advice about being a gracious winner to heart. Havoc, Call's chaos-ridden wolf, woke suddenly when a spark landed on his fur. He began to bark. "Hey!" Call's father, Alistair, yelled, running out of the house and looking around with slightly wild eyes. "Not so close to my car! I just fixed that thing!" Despite the scolding, Call felt relaxed. He'd felt pretty relaxed all summer. He'd even stopped assigning himself evil overlord points. As far as the world knew, the enemy of death, Constantine Madden, was dead. Defeated by Alistair. Only Aaron and Tamara, frenemy Jasper De Winter, and Call's father knew the truth. That Call was Constantine Madden, reborn, but without any of his memories and, hopefully, without his penchant for evil. Since the world thought Constantine was dead, and Call's friends didn't care, Call was off the hook. Aaron, despite being a Makar, could go back to goofing around with Call. They'd be heading back to the Magisterium soon, and this time they'd be Bronze Year students, which meant they'd be getting into some really awesome magic, fighting spells and flying spells. Everything was better. Everything was great. Also, Aaron's robot was a smoking wreck. Really, it was hard for Call to imagine how things could get better.
"I hope you guys remembered," said Alistair. "Tonight is the party at the Collegium. You know, the one in our honor."
Aaron and Call looked at each other in horror. They had forgotten, of course. The days had gone by in a blur of skateboarding and ice cream and movies and video games, and both of them had completely blanked out on the fact that the Assembly of Mages was throwing a victory party at the Collegium
in recognition of the fact that the enemy of death had been defeated after 13 long years of Cold War.
The assembly had chosen 5 people to honor. Call, Aaron, Tamara, Jasper, and Alistair. Call had been surprised that Alistair had agreed to go. Alistair had hated magic, the magisterium, and everything to do with mages for as long as Call could remember. Call suspected Alistair had agreed because he wanted to see the assembly clap for Call, and for everyone to agree that Call was on the side of good, that he was a hero. Call swallowed, suddenly nervous. "I don't have anything to wear," he protested. "Neither do I." Aaron looked startled. "But Tamara and her family bought you all those fancy clothes last year," Call pointed out. Tamara's parents had been so excited at the thought that their daughter was friends with a Makar, one of the rare mages who could control chaos magic, that they had practically adopted Aaron, bringing him into their house and spending money on expensive haircuts and clothes and parties. Call still couldn't quite understand why Aaron had decided to spend this summer with him and not the Rajavis. But Aaron had been very firm about it. "I grew out of those," Aaron replied. "All I have are jeans and t-shirts."
"That's why we're going to the mall," said Alistair, holding up his car keys. "Come on, boys."
"Tamara's parents took me to Brooks Brothers," Aaron said, as they headed toward Alistair's collection of refurbished cars. It was kind of weird. Call thought of their tiny local mall and grinned. "Well, get ready for a different kind of weird," he said. "We're going to travel backward in time without magic."
"I think I might be allergic to this material," said Aaron, standing in front of a full-length mirror in the back of J.L. Dimes. They sold everything, tractors, clothes, cheap dishwashers. Alistair always bought his work overalls there. Call hated it.
"It looks fine," said Alistair, who had collected a vacuum cleaner somewhere along their travels through the store and was examining it, probably for parts. He'd also picked up a jacket for himself, but had failed to try it on. Aaron took another look at the alarmingly shiny gray suit. The legs bagged around his ankles, and the lapels reminded Call of shark fins.
"Okay," Aaron said meekly. He was always very conscious that everything bought for him was a favor. He knew he didn't have money or parents to get him things. He was always grateful. Aaron and Call had both lost their mothers. Aaron's father was alive but in prison, which Aaron didn't like for people to know. To Call, it didn't seem that big of a deal. But that was probably because Call's secret was so much bigger. "I don't know, Dad," Call said, squinting into the mirror. He was wearing dark blue polyester that was too tight underneath his arms. "These might not be our sizes." Alistair sighed.
"A suit's a suit. Aaron will grow into his, and yours, well, maybe you should try something else. No use getting something that's only good for tonight."
"I'm taking a picture," Call said, pulling out his phone. "Tamara can give us advice. She knows what you're supposed to wear to stuffy mage events." There was a whoosh as Call texted Tamara the photograph. A few seconds later, she texted back, "Aaron looks like a con man who got hit with a shrink ray, and you look like you're going to Catholic school." Aaron looked over Call's padded shoulder and winced at the message.
"Well?" Alistair asked. "We could duct tape the legs, make them look shorter."
"Or," Call said, "we could go to a different store and not embarrass ourselves in front of the assembly." Alistair looked from Call to Aaron and gave in with a sigh,
putting back his vacuum cleaner.
Okay, let's go.
It was a relief to get out of the airless, overheated mall. A short car ride later, Call and Aaron were standing in front of a thrift shop that dealt in vintage stuff of all kinds, from doilies to dressers to sewing machines. Call had been here before with his dad and remembered that the proprietor, Miranda Keys, loved vintage clothes. She wore them constantly, without much respect for matching colors or styles, which meant she was often seen wandering around their town in a poodle skirt, go-go boots, and a sequined tank top with a pattern of angry cats. But Aaron didn't know that. He was looking around, smiling hesitantly, and Call's heart sank. This was going to be even worse than J.L. Dimes. What had started out kind of funny was starting to make Call feel a little sick inside. He knew his dad was eccentric, which was a nice way of saying weird, and he'd never really minded. But it wasn't fair that Aaron had to look eccentric, too. What if all Miranda had was red velvet tuxedos, or something even worse? It was bad enough that Aaron had spent the summer drinking lemonade from a powder mix instead of from fresh lemons, the way they made it at Tamara's house, sleeping on a military cot that Alistair had set up in Call's room, running through a sprinkler made from knife holes in a garden hose, and eating regular old cereal for breakfast, instead of eggs cooked to order by a chef. If Aaron showed up at this party looking stupid, it might be the final straw. Call might lose the best friend war for good. Alistair got out of the car. Call followed his dad and Aaron inside with a sense of foreboding. The suits were in the back of the room, behind the tables of odd brass musical instruments and the jadeite bowl of rusty keys. It was a lot like Alistair's own shop, now and again, except that the ceiling was hung with fur-collared coats and silk scarves, while Alistair specialized in the more industrial end of antiques. Miranda came out of the back and talked to Alistair for a few minutes about what she'd brought back from Brimfield, a huge antiques show up north, and who she'd seen there. Call's dread grew. Finally, Alistair found his way to telling her what they needed. She gave each of the boys a sharp, evaluating look, as though she were looking through them and seeing something else. She did the same thing to Alistair, her eyes narrowing, before she disappeared into the back. Aaron and Call amused themselves by wandering around the store, each one of them trying to find the weirdest object. Aaron had discovered a Batman-shaped alarm clock that said, "Wake up, Boy Wonder," when he pressed the top, and Call had unearthed a sweater made out of taped-together lollipops when Miranda re-emerged, humming, with a pile of clothes that she stacked on the counter. The first thing she pulled out was a dressing jacket for Alistair. It looked like it was made from satin with a subtle, deep green pattern to it and a bright silk lining. It was definitely old and weird, but in a not embarrassing way. "Now," she said, pointing at Call and Aaron, "your turn." She handed each one of them a folded linen suit. Aaron's was the color of cream, and Call's was dove gray. "Same as your eyes, Call," said Miranda, looking pleased with herself, as Call and Aaron threw the suits on over their shorts and t-shirts. She clapped her hands and gestured for them to look in the mirror. Call stared at his reflection. He didn't know much about clothes, but the suit fit him, and he didn't look bizarre. He actually looked kind of grown up. So did Aaron. The light colors made them both look tan.
Is this for a special occasion? Asked Miranda.
You could say that.
Alistair sounded pleased.
They're both getting awards.
For, community service, said Aaron. He met Call's eyes in the mirror. Call guessed it was only sort of a lie, though most community service didn't involve severed heads.
Fantastic, said Miranda. They both look so handsome.
Handsome. Call had never thought of himself as handsome. Aaron was the handsome one. Call was the one who was short, limped, and was too intense and sharp-featured. But he guessed that people selling stuff had to tell you that you looked good. On a whim, Call pulled out his phone, took a picture of his and Aaron's reflections in the mirror, and sent it to Tamara. A minute later, the reply came back. Nice! Attached to the message was a short video of someone falling off a chair in surprise. Call couldn't help laughing.
Do they need anything else?
Alistair asked.
Shoes, cufflinks, anything?
Well, shirts, obviously, Miranda said. I have a lot of nice ties.
I don't need you to buy me anything else, Mr. Hunt, said Aaron, looking anxious. Really?
Oh, don't worry about that,
Alistair said with a surprising lightness in his voice.
Miranda and I are in the business. We'll work out a trade.
Call looked over at Miranda to find her smiling.
There was a little Victorian brooch at your store I had my eye on.
At that, Alistair's expression stiffened a little, then relaxed almost immediately into a laugh.
Well, for that, we're definitely taking the cufflinks. Shoes, too, if you've got them.
By the time they left, they had huge bags filled with clothes, and Call was feeling pretty good. They drove back to the house with barely enough time to take showers and comb their hair. Alistair came out of his bedroom reeking of some ancient cologne and looking snappy in his new jacket and a pair of black trousers he must have unearthed in the back of his closet. Muttering, he immediately started hunting around for his car keys. He barely looked recognizable to Call as the dad who worked around the house in tweed and denim overalls. The dad who'd spent all summer helping them make robots out of spare parts. He looked like a stranger, which meant Call started to actually think about what was soon to happen. All summer he'd been feeling pretty smug over the enemy of death's demise. Constantine Madden had been dead for years, preserved in a creepy tomb, waiting to have his soul returned to his body. But, since no one had known that, the whole mage world had been waiting for Constantine to start up the Third Mage War again. When Cullum had brought the enemy's severed head back to the Magisterium, proof that he was incontrovertibly dead, the whole mage world had breathed a sigh of relief. What they didn't know was that Constantine's soul lived on. In Call. Tonight, the world of mages was going to be honoring the actual enemy of death. Even though Call had no desire to hurt anyone, the threat of a third mage war was far from over. Constantine's second-in-command, Master Joseph, had control of Constantine's chaos-ridden army. He had the powerful Alkahest, which could destroy chaos-wielders like Aaron. And Call. If he got tired waiting for Call to come over to his side, then he might attack all on his own. Call slumped down at the kitchen table. Havoc, who'd been sleeping under the table, looked up with his disturbing, coruscating eyes, as if sensing Call's distress. Although it should have made Call feel better, it actually made him feel a little worse. He could almost hear Master Joseph's voice.
Good job getting the whole mage world to lower their guard, Call. You can't escape your nature.
He pushed the thought back, firmly. All summer he'd worked on not constantly checking himself to see if he was showing signs of maybe turning out evil. All summer he'd been telling himself that he was Callum Hunt, who had been raised by Alistair Hunt, and he wasn't going to make the same mistakes Constantine Madden had made. He was a different person. He was! A few minutes later, Aaron came out of Call's room, looking dapper in his cream-colored suit. His blonde hair was brushed back, and even his cufflinks shone. He looked just as happy as he ever had in the designer suits that Tamara's family had given him. Or at least he looked happy, until he saw Call and did a double-take.
"You okay?" Aaron asked.
"You look a little green around the gills. You don't have stage fright, do you?"
"Maybe," Call said. "I'm not used to people looking at me a lot. I mean, people look at me because of my legs sometimes, but it's not a good kind of looking. Try to think of it as the end scene in Star Wars, where everyone cheers and Princess Leia puts medals on Han and Luke."
Call raised an eyebrow.
"Who's Princess Leia in this visual? Master Rufus?"
Master Rufus was the teacher of their apprentice group at the Magisterium. He was craggy, gruff, and wise, and had a lot more gray hairs than Princess Leia.
"Later," said Aaron, solemnly, "he will wear the gold bikini."
Havoc barked. Alistair held up his car keys, triumphant. "Would it help you boys if I promised that tonight is going to be boring and uneventful? The party is supposed to honor us, but I guarantee that it's mostly for the assembly to congratulate itself."
"You sound like you've been to one of these before," said Call, standing up from the table.
He smoothed his suit anxiously. Linen wrinkled fast. Already he couldn't wait to get back into jeans and a t-shirt.
"You've seen the wristband Constantine wore when he was a student with me at the Magisterium," said Alistair. "He won a lot of awards and prizes. Our whole apprentice group did."
It was true that Call had seen the wristband. Alistair had sent it to Master Rufus the first year Call had been at the Magisterium. All students were issued wristbands of leather and metal. The metal changed whenever the student entered a new year at the school, and the wristband was also studded with stones, each one representing an accomplishment or talent. Constantine's had more stones than Call had ever seen before. Call reached to touch his own wristband. It still showed the metal of a second-year copper student. Like Aaron's, Call's gleamed with the black stone of the Makar. Call's eyes met Aaron's as he dropped his hand, and he could tell Aaron knew what he was thinking. Here he was, getting an award, being honored for doing good. And it was still something that made him just like Constantine Madden. Alistair shook his car keys, jangling Call out of his reverie.
"Come on," Alistair said. "The assembly doesn't like it when its honorees are late."
Havoc tailed them to the door, then sat with a thump and a thin whine.
"Can he come?"
Call asked his father as they walked out the door. "He'll be good, and he deserves an award too."
"Absolutely not," said Alistair.
"Is it because you don't trust him around the assembly?"
Call asked, though once he did, he wasn't sure he wanted the answer.
"It's because I don't trust the assembly around him,"
Alistair replied with a stern look. Then he headed out the door, leaving Call no choice but to follow. Chapter 2. The Collegium, like the Magisterium,
was built in such a way that it was concealed from non-mages. It rested beneath the Virginia coastline, its corridors spiraling deep below the water. Call had heard of its location, but still wasn't prepared for Alistair to stop them as they were walking along a jetty and indicate a grate at their feet, partially concealed under leaves and dirt.
If you put your ear close to that, you can usually hear an incredibly dull lecture. But tonight, you might actually be able to hear music.
Although Alistair's words weren't particularly complimentary to the Collegium, he spoke in a wistful way.
You never went here, though, right? Call asked.
Not as a student, Alistair said.
There was a whole generation of us that mostly didn't go. We were too busy dying in the war.
Sometimes, Call thought, uncharitably, that everyone should have left Constantine Madden alone. Sure, he'd done terrible experiments, putting chaos into the souls of animals and creating the chaos ridden. Sure, he'd reanimated the dead, looking for a way to cure death itself and bring back his brother. Sure, he was breaking mage law. But maybe if everyone had left him alone, so many people would still be alive. Call's mother would still be alive. The real Call would still be alive, too. He couldn't help thinking. But Call couldn't say any of that. So he said nothing at all. Aaron was looking out over the waves at the setting sun. All summer, having Aaron at the house had felt like having a brother. Someone to joke around with. Someone who was always there to watch movies or destroy robots. As the drive to the Collegium had gone on, though, Aaron had become quieter. By the time Alistair had parked his silver 1937 Rolls-Royce Phantom near the boardwalk, and they had passed a giant, weird statue of Poseidon, Aaron had pretty much stopped talking entirely.
You okay?
Call asked as they walked on. Aaron shrugged.
I don't know. It's just that I was prepared to be the Makar. I knew it was dangerous and I was scared, but I understood what I had to do. And when people gave me stuff, I understood why. I understood what I owed them in return. But now I don't know what it means to be a Makar. I mean, if there's no war against the enemy, that's great. But then what do I—
We're here,
Alistair said, coming to a stop. Waves crashed on the black rocks around them, kicking up salty spray and frothing in little tide pools. Call felt the light rain of it, like a cool breath across his face. He wanted to say something to reassure Aaron. But Aaron wasn't looking at him anymore. He was frowning at a scuttling crab. It crossed a braid of seaweed, tangled with a piece of old rope, the threadbare ends floating in the water like someone's unbound hair.
Is this safe?
Call asked instead.
As safe as anything connected with the mages,
Alistair said, tapping his foot on the ground in a quick, repetitive rhythm. For a moment, nothing happened. Then there was a grating sound, and a square of rock slid aside to reveal a long, spiraling staircase. It wound down and down, like the one in the library of the Magisterium, except there weren't rows of books here. Only the curving staircase and, at the very bottom, a glimpse of a square of marble floor.
Call swallowed hard. It would have been a long walk for anyone, but for him, it seemed impossible. His leg would be cramping by the time they got halfway down. If he stumbled, it would be a very scary fall.
Said Call, I don't think I can... Levitate yourself,
Aaron said quietly.
What?
Levitation is air magic. We're surrounded by rock, dirt and stone. Push down on it, and it'll lift you. You don't have to fly, just float a few inches off the ground.
Cole glanced toward Alistair. Even now he was a little wary of doing magic around his father, after all the years Alistair had spent telling him that magic was evil, that mages were evil, and wanted to kill him. But Alistair, glancing down at the long stairway, just nodded curtly.
"I'll go down first," Aaron said. "If you fall, I'll catch you. At least we'll go down together."
Cole started to back down the stairs, putting one foot carefully in front of the other.
Cole could hear the noise of voices and clinking silverware far below.
He took a deep breath and reached out to touch the force of the earth, to reach into it and draw it into himself, then push off, as if he were pushing off from the side of a swimming pool into the water. He felt the drag on his muscles, and then a lightness as his body rose into the air. As Aaron had instructed, he didn't try to lift himself more than a few inches. With just enough space to clear the steps, he drifted downward. Though he wanted to tell Aaron he wasn't going to fall, it was kind of nice knowing that if he did, someone was poised to catch him. Alistair's steady footsteps were also reassuring. Carefully, they made their way down, Alistair and Aaron walking, Cole hovering just above the stairs. A few steps from the bottom, he let himself drift gently down. He hit the stairs and stumbled. It was Alistair who reached out to grab his shoulder.
"Steady on," he said.
"I'm fine," Cole said gruffly, and limped quickly down the last few steps. His muscles ached a little, but nothing like the pain he would have been in if he'd walked. Aaron was already on the ground and gave him a big grin.
"Check it out," he said. "The Collegium."
"Whoa."
Cole had never seen anything like it. The spaces of the Magisterium were often magnificent, and some were enormous, but they were always clearly underground caverns carved from natural rock. This was different. A huge hall opened in front of them. The walls, the floor, and the columns that held up the roof were all gold-flecked white marble. A tapestry map of the Collegium decorated one wall. There was a huge dais that ran along one side of the room, and multicolored banners hung behind it. Sayings from the works of Paracelsus and other famous alchemists were printed across them in gold.
"All is interrelated," said one. "Fire and earth, air and water. All are but one thing, not four, not two, and not three, but one. Where they are not together is only an incomplete piece."
A huge chandelier hung from the ceiling. Fat crystals dangled from it like teardrops, scattering light in all directions over the large crowd of people. Members of the assembly in golden robes, masters of the magisterium in black, and everyone else in elegant suits and dresses.
"Fancy," said Alistair, grimly. "Too fancy."
"Yeah," said Cole. "The magisterium is a real dump. I had no idea." "There aren't any windows," Aaron said, looking around. "Why aren't there windows?"
"Probably because we're underwater," Cole answered. "Wouldn't the pressure break the glass?" Before they could continue their speculation, Master North, head of the Magisterium, came toward them out of the crowd.
"Alistair, Aaron, Cole, you're late."
"Underwater traffic," said Cole. Aaron elbowed him. Master North gave him a stern look.
Anyway, you're here. The others are waiting with the assembly.
Master North,
said Alistair with a curt nod.
My apologies for our lateness, but we are the honorees. You could hardly start without us, could you?
Master North gave a thin smile. Both he and Alistair appeared as though they might become quickly exhausted by the strain of being civil.
Come with me.
Aaron and Call shared a look before following the adults through the room. As the crowd grew more tightly packed, people started to press in at them, staring at Aaron, and at Call, too. One middle-aged man with a paunch caught Call's arm.
Thank you,
the man whispered, before letting him go.
Thank you for killing Constantine.
I didn't.
Call stumbled on, as hands reached out of the crowd. He shook some, avoided others, gave one a high five, and then felt stupid.
Is this what it's like for you all the time? He asked Aaron.
Not before last summer, Aaron said. Anyway, I thought you wanted to be a hero.
I guess it's better than being a villain,
Call thought, but let the words die on his tongue. Finally, they came to where the assembly was waiting, separated from the rest of the room by floating silver ropes. Anastasia Tarquin, one of the most powerful members of the assembly, was talking to Tamara's mother. Tarquin was an extremely tall, older woman with masses of upswept, bright silver hair, and Tamara's mother had to crane her neck to look at her. Tamara was standing with Celia and Jasper, all three of them laughing about something. It was the first time Call had seen Tamara since the start of summer. She was wearing a bright yellow dress that made her brown skin glow. Her hair fell in heavy, dark waves around her face and down her back. Celia had done something weird and elegant and complicated with her blonde hair. She was in a seafoam green gauzy thing that seemed to waft around her. Both the girls turned toward Call and Aaron. Tamara's face lit up and Celia smiled. Call felt a little bit like someone had kicked him in the chest. Weirdly, it wasn't an unpleasant feeling. Tamara ran over to Aaron, giving him a quick hug. Celia hung back as though struck with sudden shyness. It was Jasper who came up to Call, clapping him on the shoulder, which was a relief, as nothing about Jasper made Call feel as if his world was tilting. Jasper just looked like his usual smug self, his dark hair sticking up with hair gel.
So, how's the old EOD himself?
Jasper whispered, making Call flinch.
You're the star of the show!
Call hated that Jasper knew the truth about him. Even if he was fairly sure Jasper would never reveal his secret, it didn't stop Jasper from making comments and needling him every chance he got.
Come,
Master Rufus said.
Time is wasting. We have a ceremony to attend, whether we want to or not.
With that, Call, Aaron, Tamara, Jasper, Master Rufus, Master Milagros, and Alistair were herded up onto a raised dais. Celia waved goodbye as they went. Call knew they were in trouble when he saw there were chairs up on the dais. Chairs meant a long ceremony.
He wasn't wrong.
The ceremony went by in a blur, but it was an extended and boring blur. Various assembly members made speeches about how integral they personally had been to the mission.
They couldn't have done it without me, said a blonde assembly member Call had never seen before.
Master Rufus and Master Milagros were praised for having such fine apprentices. The Rajavis were praised for having raised such a brave daughter. Alistair was praised for his diligence in leading their expedition. The kids themselves were credited with being the greatest heroes of their time. They were applauded and kissed on their cheeks and patted on their backs. Alistair was given a heavy medal that swung on his neck. He began to look a little wild-eyed after they stood up for the sixth round of applause.
No one mentioned severed heads, or the whole misunderstanding where they had thought Alistair was in league with the enemy, or how no one at the Magisterium had even known that the kids were going on the mission. Everyone acted like this had been the plan all along. They were all given their bronzier wristbands and stones of glimmering red beryl to show the worth of their accomplishment. Call wondered what the red stone meant exactly. Every stone color had a meaning. Yellow for healing, orange for bravery, and so on. Call stepped up to have Master Rufus place the stone in his wristband. The red beryl went in with a click, like a lock being shut.
"Column Hunt, Makar!"
Someone in the room shouted. Someone else stood up and cried out Aaron's name. Call let the shouts wash over him like a bewildering tide.
"Call and Aaron! Makaris! Makaris! Makaris!"
Call felt a hand brush his shoulder. It was Anastasia Tarquin.
"In Europe," she said, "when they discover someone is a Chaos Mage, they don't celebrate them. They kill them."
Call turned to stare at her in shock, but she was already moving away through the crowd of assembly members. Master Rufus, who clearly hadn't heard her,
no one had but Call,
came forward toward Aaron and Call.
"Makars," he said. "This isn't just a celebration. We have something to discuss."
"Right here?"
Aaron asked, clearly startled. Rufus shook his head.
"It's time for you to see something very few apprentices ever see. The war room. Come with me."
Tamara looked after Aaron and Call worriedly as they were led away through the crowd.
"The war room?" Aaron muttered. "What's that?"
"I don't know,"
Call whispered back.
"I thought the war was over."
Master Rufus led them expertly behind the floating ropes, avoiding the eyes of the crowd, until they reached a door set into the far wall. It was a bronze door, carved with the shapes of tall ships sailing, cannons and explosions over the sea. Rufus pushed the door open, and they entered the war room. Call's words about why there were no windows echoed in his own head, because there were plenty of windows here. There was a marble floor, but every other surface was glass, and the glass glowed with enchanted light. Beyond the glass, Call could see sea creatures swimming by, fish with brightly colored stripes, sharks with coal-black eyes, graceful flapping rays.
"Whoa," said Aaron, craning his neck. "Look up."
Call did, and saw the water above them glowing with the light of the surface. A school of silvery fish shot by and then pivoted according to some unseen signal, all of them racing off in the new direction.
"Sit,"
Assemblyman Graves, old, grumpy, and mean, said.
"We realize this is a celebration, but there are things we must discuss. Master Rufus, you and your two apprentices should sit here."
He indicated chairs beside him. Call and Aaron exchanged a reluctant glance before shuffling over to take their seats. The rest of the assembly members were arranging themselves around the table, making small talk. Above them, visible beyond the glass, an eel ribboned its way through the sea and snapped up a slow-moving fish. Call wondered if it was an ominous sign. Once the room had quieted down, Graves
resumed speaking.
Thanks to the efforts of our honorees this evening, we are having a very different discussion than we could have anticipated having. Constantine Madden is dead.
He looked around the room, as if waiting for that information to sink in. Cole couldn't help feeling that if it hadn't sunk in yet, it never would, given how many times the enemy of death is dead had been repeated during the honoring ceremony.
And yet...
Graves slammed his hand down on the table, making Cole jump.
We cannot rest. Constantine Madden might be defeated, but his army is still out there. We must strike now and root out the chaos-ridden and all of Constantine's allies.
A murmur went around the room. No one has been able to detect any sign of the chaos-ridden since Madden's death, said Master North. It's as if they disappeared when he died. Several mages looked hopeful at this, but Graves only shook his head grimly.
They are out there somewhere. We must assemble teams to hunt them down and destroy them.
Cole felt a little queasy. The chaos-ridden were basically mindless zombies, all their humanity pushed out to make room for chaos. But he'd heard them speak, seen them move, even kneel to him. The idea of a pyre of their burning bodies made his stomach turn. What about chaos-ridden animals? Asked Anastasia Tarquin. Most of them never served the enemy of death. They are the descendants of the unfortunate creatures that did. Unlike the chaos-ridden people, they're alive, not reanimated bodies.
Still, they're dangerous. I move that we exterminate them all,
Graves said.
Not havoc.
Cole yelled before anyone could stop him. The members of the assembly turned in his direction. Anastasia had a small smile on her face, as though she'd enjoyed his outburst. She seemed like someone who didn't mind when things didn't go the way everyone else expected. Her gaze slid to Aaron, gauging his reaction. The pet of the Makaris, she said, looking back at Cole. Surely havoc can be exempted.
And the Order of Disorder has been studying other chaos-ridden beasts. Keeping some alive for their research has value,
added Rufus. The Order of Disorder was a small group of rebellious mages who lived in the woods just outside the Magisterium, studying chaos magic. Cole wasn't sure what he thought of them. They'd tried to force Aaron to stay and help with their chaos experiments. They hadn't been nice about it either.
Yes, yes, said Graves dismissively. Perhaps a small number can be saved. Although I have never much cared for the Order of Disorder, as you well know. We need to keep an eye on them, to be sure that none of Constantine's conspirators are hiding out among them, and we need to find Master Joseph. We cannot forget that he's still dangerous and will almost certainly attempt to use the Alkahest against us.
Anastasia Tarquin made a small note on a paper. Several other mages murmured among themselves. Quite a few were sitting up straight, trying to make themselves look important. Master Rufus was nodding. But Cole suspected he didn't much like Graves either.
Lastly, we must make sure that Colum Hunt and Aaron Stewart use their Makar abilities in the service of the Assembly and the larger mage community. Master Rufus, it is going to be integral that you report regularly on their teaching as they move into their bronze, silver, and gold years, readying themselves to go to the Collegium.
They are my apprentices.
Master Rufus raised a single brow.
I need to have independence to teach them as I see fit.
We can discuss that later, said Graves.
They are Makars before they are students of the Magisterium. It would be well for both you and them to remember that.
Aaron shot Call a worried glance. Master Rufus looked grim. Graves went on.
Due to the Magisterium's proximity to the largest number of chaos-ridden animals, we're going to expect the school to take point on their destruction. You can't possibly expect the students of the Magisterium to spend their schooltime murdering animals, protested Master Rufus, rising to his feet. I object strongly to this suggestion, Master North.
I agree with Rufus, said Master North, after a pause.
They're not animals. They're monsters, Graves argued. The woods around the Magisterium have been full of them for years. And we haven't treated the situation with the seriousness that we could, because the enemy could always have made more. But now we have a chance to exterminate them.
They may be monsters, said Rufus, but they look like animals. And there are those like Havoc, who give us all pause and reason to wonder if they might be saved rather than destroyed. Surely it is in the interests of the whole mage world for our students to learn mercy. Constantine Madden, he added in a low voice, never did.
Graves shot him a look of something very close to hatred.
Fine, he said in a clipped voice. The removal of the chaos-ridden animals will be dealt with by a team headed up by myself and other members of the Assembly. Please don't expect me to entertain any complaining about how we'll be cluttering up the woods where your students practice. This is more important than your school.
Of course,
Master Rufus said, still in the same low voice. Call tried to catch his eye. But Rufus was imperturbable.
That leaves us with one last point of business, said Graves. The spy.
This time, the murmur that ran around the table was very loud indeed.
We have reason to believe there is a spy in the Magisterium,
Graves pronounced.
Someone freed the elemental monster Automatonis and sent him to kill the Makar, Aaron Stewart.
Everyone looked at Call and Aaron.
Yep, Call said. That did happen.
Graves nodded.
We will be placing various spy traps in the school. And Anastasia will be guarding the tunnels where the great elementals are kept. The spy will be caught and dealt with appropriately.
Spy traps?
Aaron mouthed to Call. Call tried not to laugh, because what he was picturing was a big pit in the ground, hidden with important papers or something. But since, for once, it seemed like the Assembly and the Magisterium had an actual plan to take care of a real danger. Maybe Call could spend his bronze year just learning stuff and getting into the regular, fun kind of trouble, instead of the world-ruining kind. So long as he kept Havoc out of the woods and away from the animal murderers, so long as Master Joseph didn't come back. So long as there really was nothing wrong with his soul.
Chapter 3
After the Assembly meeting, Call and Aaron were free to return to the party. Hors d'oeuvres were being passed around, but Call didn't feel hungry. He was thinking about Havoc's chaos-ridden family, and all the other chaos-ridden animals out in the forest. Call didn't remember being Constantine Madden, but that didn't mean that he didn't owe something to the innocent creatures Constantine had changed.
There had to be something he could do. So, how was the secret meeting? Jasper asked, walking up with Celia and Tamara. All three of them looked bright-eyed and relaxed, like they'd been laughing a lot. Or maybe dancing. Some dancing had started on the other side of the party. Cole eyed it with suspicion and alarm. Weird, Aaron said, oblivious to Cole's mood. He grabbed a cheese puff off a passing waiter's plate and stuffed it into his mouth. Then he made a muffled sound, appearing as though he'd planned to say more before hunger had taken over. Cole filled them in. It was all about chaos-ridden people and animals. Getting rid of them, basically. Not havoc, Tamara said, dark eyes horrified. Cole was pleased with her for having the same reaction he'd had. It was nice to be reminded that havoc was also important to his two best friends. Two more waiters came by with plates and snacks. Cole took three shrimp toasts from one and a chicken skewer from the other. He should probably try to eat something, he thought, though his stomach felt knotted. Jasper piled an enormous amount of food onto his plate and began shoveling his way through it with the determination of a shark. Havoc got a pass, Cole said. But basically, Graves is in cleanup mode. Everything that's left over from the time of the Enemy of Death, he wants erased. Tamara was clearly bubbling over with questions. Did you... She began, but then looked over at Celia and seemed to think better of it. Celia hadn't been with them when they'd left the school to try to find Alistair. She didn't know Cole's secret. Never mind. We should just have fun tonight. Aaron, come on, dance with me. Aaron managed to grab another cheese puff before he was seized by Tamara. He handed his empty plate to Jasper and disappeared into the mass of dancing people in a swirl of Tamara's yellow skirts. Celia gave Cole a hopeful look he pretended not to see. With his leg, he had no hope of doing anything but embarrassing himself on a dance floor. Cole smiled at her but said nothing. After the awkward moment had stretched out as long as an awkward moment possibly could, Celia sighed. "I'm going to get a drink," she said, and headed off toward an enormous punch bowl.
"Smooth," said Jasper.
"I guess everything they say about Constantine having deadly charisma was maybe not so accurate." Out of all of them, Jasper was the only one who Cole sometimes caught looking at him with suspicion or worry, as if maybe he didn't know him at all.
"I'm not the enemy," Cole said under his breath.
"Let's test that," said Jasper, glancing at Cole's plate. "The Enemy of Death would never give me his last chicken skewer." Cole handed it over without comment. He wasn't that hungry anyway.
"The Enemy of Death would also never introduce me to that hot girl who just waved at you."
Cole looked over in surprise to see that the hot girl Jasper was talking about was actually a girl he'd met before. A friend of Tamara's older sister, Kimaya. She had long black hair and elegant cheekbones. She waved when she saw him looking in her direction. Cole gave Jasper his most evil look.
"You're right," he said, and walked off to find Alistair.
He thought he'd seen him talking to Anastasia Tarquin, her silver hair bobbing above the crowd. Cole was pushing through a knot of people by the drinks table when someone tapped him on the shoulder. It was the girl Jasper had mentioned, Jennifer Matsui. She was a gold year, like Kimaya, and up close, she was a head taller than Cole.
"Column," she said brightly. "Congratulations on the award."
"Thanks," Cole said, craning his neck to see Jasper staring at him from across the room,
as if he couldn't believe what was happening. It was a very good award. That hadn't been what he'd meant to say at all.
I have something for you, she said, dropping her voice to a low, conspiratorial whisper. A pretty blonde girl gave it to me.
She held out a folded piece of paper with Call's name scribbled on it. Puzzled, he took it. Jennifer blew him a kiss and bounced off through the crowd, back toward Kimaya and the small knot of older students who were giggling together. Call saw a familiar face. Alex Strike, one of the few older students he was friends with. Alex and Kimaya had broken up last year, but from the way they were standing and laughing together, either they'd gotten back together, or at least they were friends again. Call unfolded the note.
Call, I need to talk to you alone. Meet me in the trophy room. Celia.
For a long moment, he just stared at it, heartbeat accelerating. He tried to tell himself that he shouldn't be worried, that Celia was his friend, and that they'd taken lots of walks with Havoc outside the Magisterium. This wasn't much different from that. But in his experience, when someone needed to talk to you, it was usually about something bad. Or it could be the other thing. A dating thing. He'd seen the bronzier students hold hands and share drinks and giggle a lot in the gallery. He really hoped she didn't want to do that, but what if she did? And what if he wasn't any good at it? Besides, he didn't even know where the trophy room was. His palms had started to sweat. Call gritted his teeth and wiped his hands on his pants. Hadn't Jasper just been testing his evil overlordliness? That was what Call needed to focus on. Evil overlords, even ones who might not remember evil overlording, shouldn't be scared of meeting up with their friends who just happened to be girls. Call was going to be fine. He had this. With renewed and slightly desperate optimism, he headed toward the tapestry map. He could see Tamara and Aaron still dancing out on the floor with the others. He wondered if it had occurred to Tamara to ask him to dance, but he knew she would always choose Aaron first. He'd accepted it a long time ago. He didn't even really mind. Anyway, Celia had said to come alone, which he should definitely do if this was going to be about dating, which he really hoped it wasn't. According to the map, the trophy room wasn't far. He headed away from the crowd, through a set of doors, and down a marble corridor with small alcoves set into the walls, holding old manuscripts and artifacts. Call liked the clicking sounds his shoes made on the floor as he went. He stopped to peer at an old wristband that must have been the prototype for the one he wore. The leather had been worn thin, and several of the stones were missing from their setting. He didn't recognize the name of the mage who was on the plaque behind it, but the date of his death was 1609, which seemed like a very long time ago. A few more steps and Call came to